Good Laugh, James Corden, Carpool Karaoke, Katy Perry. Absolutely hysterical, as only the two of them could be. Anyway, sorry about that. So today, I'm going to talk about, the title of my talk is Minding the Gap. So how many of you have been to London and know that when you go in the tube, you are constantly told to mind the gap? And the first time I heard that, I thought, okay. It's the gap between the platform in the subway and the train. They're telling you to mind that step so that you don't fall in. Mind the gap. So that is something that actually has a lot of use, in from my perspective, in this whole philosophy, minding the gap. Because it's important for us to know where we are and where we want to be. And sometimes there's a gap between the two, and we have to be aware of what that is. So I'm going to talk a little bit about more about that today. But first, the Centers for Spiritual Living has had the year 2017 living a values-based spiritual living. And the quote for the year was, "We stand together in a shared commitment and devotion to our spiritual principles, practices, and values." And values are a person's principles or standards of behavior, one's judgment of what's important in life, what is intrinsically held as deserving, importance, worth, or usefulness. And then this is an interesting one, the art of luminosity, and it's the relative degree of lightness or darkness of a particular color. And that luminosity also dwells in us, and that there is, in all shades of us, there is that divine. So December, each month we have a theme, and December's theme is integrity. And the statement about integrity for the month is, we embrace the quality of being honest and strive to let our inner convictions match our outer actions. We express wholeness, honesty, and fairness in our relationships and activities. And that minding the gap really fits with to let our inner convictions match our outer actions. Because I don't know about you, I would love to tell you that all the time my inner convictions and my outer actions match. But that would be not true. Ask my husband, he can testify to that particular one. And it's not to make that even as wrong, but to just be aware of what that difference is. So I had a talk all written yesterday. And there was a quote in it. A part of what happens with the Centers for Spiritual Living is they divvy up each week to different ministers, and they come up with an outline and quotes and some suggestions that you can either use or not use. So there was one that I used, and as I was going over it, I thought, I wonder what else this says. So I downloaded the book real quickly, read all 130 pages of it, and had to rewrite the talk. It's a fabulous book. It's called, If You Know Who You Are, You Will Know What to Do, Living with Integrity. It's an extraordinary book. I was absolutely thrilled with it. It's written by a man named Ronald Greer, and he's the director of pastoral counseling service at Peachtree Road United Methodist Church in Atlanta. And it's really, it's a fabulous book that puts integrity into a very attainable light. So I have to always go back to the dictionary. Integrity, adherence to moral and ethical principles, soundness of moral character, honesty, adherence to a code of special, adherence to a code, especially moral or artistic values. The state of being whole, entire, or undiminished. The quality or state of being whole, complete, or undivided. Completeness. And that's really, in my opinion, when we stand on our spiritual values and we stand in integrity and we do our best, hear me that really loud, do our best to have that gap to mind be as small as possible between our intended values and our actually lived values, that's where integrity comes from. And the word itself is Latin for integrare, or integer, and it means whole, integrated, and complete. And from my perspective, That's where my beliefs, my convictions, my behaviors, they are all brought together. That's what integrity is to me. It's that weaving together of the whole picture. And so for me, I look at it as something that I don't have to, oh, I don't know whether struggle is the right word, but I don't have to take it too seriously, I guess, strangely to say. But, you know, I love Brené Brown. I'm certified to teach all of her work, and Roar is actually a theme song that we had in one of our classes. She says, leaders need to be brave because it takes courage to lead. And we are leaders of our own life. So she says, you can choose courage or you can choose comfort, but you can't choose both. They are mutually exclusive. And her definition of integrity is choosing courage over comfort, choosing what is right over what is fun, fast, or easy, and choosing to practice our values rather than simply professing them. And when Ronald Greer talks about it, he says, by my integrity, I'm defined. Out of integrity, I make the choices that become my life. So his definition is very, very similar. Integrity is doing the right thing when you know it's the right thing to do. It's who we are. It's being true to the lives to which we have been called. And that's really important, to be true to the lives that we've been called. Because each of us has indeed been called to show up as the magnificent expressions of God that we are. And the only time that we really struggle, in my opinion, doesn't mean things don't happen, but the struggle, the challenge, the pain of it comes when we don't stand in that magnificence of who we are. That we can let the magnificence of who we are cry or be sad or be unhappy or be joyful, all of those things, but that's the magnificence of who we are, to see it, to love it, and to really steep in it. So in the book, he makes two distinctions. Personal integrity, and that is where we are authentically the persons we're created to be. It means living a life of wholeness and congruence. And then he talks about moral integrity, which is when we do what is right simply because we know that it's the right thing to do. It means living a life of character and virtue. And he says to have integrity, we need both. And I believe that too. So he says integrity, this is why I sort of regrouped everything I said. He classifies it beautifully. He says integrity requires that I discover who I am, that I claim who I am, and that I live who I am. And that sounds easy, but rarely is it, right? So what he looks at is discovering who I am. It's living with character. And these are the questions that he talks about. What do I value? What do I believe? What is important to me? What is precious to me? You know, because what's precious, we guard, we take care of. And what is sacred to me? And those are the things that if we spend time going within to look at those types of things, what's important to me? Because so often we get caught up in doing stuff. I will raise my hand to that one, because truthfully for me and for many of us, that kind of crazy busy is a way to just step away from having a life of congruence and integrity, right? It's just because when you're so crazy busy, you're numb and nothing else matters. You're just caught up in the doing, 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 doing. It's like the hamster wheel. So that process of being able to say, what do I value? What do I believe? What is important, what's precious, and what's sacred. And then when I stop and look at what I'm doing up against the answers to those questions, it's amazing how quick and easy it is to say, this is really not important. I am on a hamster wheel that I can choose to get off. And I know Reverend Karen and I have talked in this time that she's been with Hugh about that's exactly what happens. It's part of why she decided to just step away for a short period of time. because you have to look at what's important. And you have to live in congruence with that. So I absolutely honor. She is such a woman of principle and commitment to living by that. I so honor her for doing exactly this in taking some time away. So the next step that he talks about is the process of claiming who I am. So Ernest Holmes has a fabulous quote. He says, "The desire you have to be something, to do something, is a mental echo in your mind of the spirit which already exists within you." And if you have Ernest's books on Kindle or on your iPad, and you do a word search on them for mental echo, he uses that a lot. He refers to that still small voice that we have within us as the mental echo of the divine within us. And I think that's just a beautiful way. It's poetic in a lovely way. And Ajahsante, who's a delightful teacher who is in the wisdom tradition of Buddhism, he says, "The truth is always speaking to us. The voice might be quiet, but it is ever present, guiding us to navigate the river of our lives with perfect intelligence. As we listen to our own inner voice, we become we go beyond the voice of doubt or fear. We hear the voice of God within us." So that's really a part of being able to see it, that if you've discovered who you are and you begin to claim it, you have to really listen to that still small voice. You have to honor those mental echoes of the divine, because they're really, if you look at then at the questions about what's sacred and what's precious, it's amazing how perfectly those align. And when I do that, boy, is there a feeling. I don't know for you, but there's a feeling when, if you ever had it, when you're doing something, you just know that everything is just hitting on all cylinders. It feels right. It flows easily. And to me, that's what this is about. So looking at that, there's something called the assumption of positive intent. Now, that's a challenge. The assumption of positive intent is this. There's a professor at University of Houston who teaches organizational development, and one of the things she talks about when she comes up, when they talk about conflict, is, what is the hypothesis of generosity? What is the most generous assumption you can make about this person's intention or what they said? That is a lovely idea, but it is really hard to do. But if you think about it, one of the things that I have learned to do is, and certainly I bite the hook. I bite the hook and will just go down the road like a wide-mouthed bass sometimes. But when I can stop and back up and really look and say, what is the most generous way I could look at this? It doesn't mean you're a sucker. It doesn't mean you have to get that somebody walks on you. It just means it's easier on me. It's a happier for me if I can look for the positive intent. And so the four agreements is something that's just delightful, because one of the four agreements, one of them is, don't take anything personally. That is such wisdom. Because I don't know about you, have you ever been in a situation where you kind of clash with somebody and, you know, you just let it go, and then they'll come up to you and say, I'm really sorry about this or that. And you go, I'm sorry, I missed that. You know, because we will stay with something, we'll chew on it, we'll ruminate over it, just like a cow chewing its cud, whether we've done something or whether we perceive someone's done something to us. So that assumption of positive intent is being able to say, maybe that person was in a bad mood, maybe they have something going on in their personal life, whatever it may be, I don't have to necessarily assume right away that they're bad, wrong, and awful. I don't have to assume that I'm bad, wrong, and awful. I just can allow my mind to sit in a more comfortable position. So Excuse me. My pages are out of order. That's what's wrong. There we go. I had a whole huge chunk that I put in twice while I was busy rewriting it. So Brené Brown talks about big with a slightly different version of our big. She says boundaries, integrity, and generosity. So that generosity, there's a big debate among some people. Do you believe that someone's doing the best they can? Some will say yes, and some will say no. Not only no, but something else no. You can fill in whatever blank you want. For me, it changes by the day. But at that moment, I've come to the fact that at that moment, in that moment, with what they have to work with, they did the best they could. Does that mean they don't have to be accountable for their actions? Oh, no. Oh, no. Everybody has to be accountable for their actions. But it allows me a step in forgiveness to be able to say, I have no idea what it's like to live in their skin. I have no idea what's going on in their mind, in their heart, in their emotions at this moment in time. And if I were walking in their shoes, if I walked a mile in their moccasins, who's to say I'd do any better? And that makes me choke sometimes, right? But my first career was an alcohol and drug rehab counselor. I worked in a medium security men's prison. And we had a man who the prison psychologist said was absolutely sociopathic. And no feeling, no remorse, absolutely none, zero. And I had him in my class, and I went to him and I said, you know, I just disagree. He said, but he has no remorse for what he did. I said, no, he doesn't. His problem is he feels too profoundly. His best friend was horribly beaten and abused by his father, cigarettes out on his back. Oh, I mean, you name it, it had happened to him. And one day his friend came and his arms were, both of them were literally broken. He killed him. He killed the father. So I said, is it right? Was it the right thing to do? Maybe yes, maybe no. But society says no. But the problem is he felt so intensely he had no other way to deal with it in his mind. And so that's, for me, he's my great example of, I have no idea what it was like to live inside of his skin, watching his very, very best friend be so violently abused. Given that he came from a similar background, I can't promise you that I'd do any different. And that's what positive intent for me is to just be able to back up and say, I don't know. That's the generosity. And then boundaries. Boundaries are something that are kind of hard, but they can be simplified actually to a great degree. Setting boundaries means getting clear on what behaviors are okay and what's not okay. And that's really about it. That's what a boundary is. What's okay and what's not okay. And, excuse me, the questions associated with that then are, what boundaries do I need to put in place so I can work from a place of integrity and extend the most generous interpretations of the intentions, words, and actions of others? Boundaries aren't easy, but integrity helps you keep your boundaries in place because you're living based on principles. So that's a really hard, for me, it took me a long time to learn how to put up healthy boundaries. My boundaries usually were steamroll me or I will smack you. I had nowhere in between. It's usually verbally smack you, but still, it's just, you know, I had nowhere in between. I would just turn myself into a pretzel until it was like, that's it, I'm done. So part of this process is to really learn that it's okay for me to get very clear on what's right for me and what's wrong for me and to stand in that with our integrity. And that's a part of what he talks about, claiming who I am. So he says, I must intentionally claim what I have discovered to be important, precious, and sacred for my life. The values I choose are about my life. One thing to know, it is one thing to know them, it is another thing to commit myself to them. If I am living with integrity, I must choose to be defined by what I believe to be true for me. And that's really an extraordinary way to look at boundaries for me. And that choice is crucial. You know, a lot of times there's great debates, whether it's nurture or nature, whether it's your biology or your circumstances. And he says, what if there's a third option, and that is choice? Yes, we only can work with what we have. We have the parents we had, we had the upbraising we had, we live in the culture we live in, our socioeconomics, whatever it may be. That's what we had. But we have choice. And that's, to me, one of the greatest things this philosophy teaches. We have choice. I can look at what's happened. I can either choose to respond, or I can choose to be in control of how I can let response happen, or choose to be in control. I can claim my choices and live by who I am. Living with integrity requires clarity of purpose, commitment to your values, and courage. It takes a tremendous amount of courage to be, if you know what's yes and what's no. A lot of times it takes courage to say, no, I'm sorry. No, I can't do this or I won't do that. It's unacceptable to be treated this way or that way. I had in my life a person who kind of generally treated people poorly, and they would say to me, why does he never treat you that way? It's because it's absolutely unacceptable. I've gotten to the point where it's unacceptable to be treated in that manner. And I didn't have to push it. I didn't have to shove. I didn't have to have a verbal smackdown. It was just the ability to know within myself that I have boundaries of what's okay and what's not okay. And that living by that is what we say in Science of Mind when you say, treat and move your feet. Live by who you are. So the gap process is there are aspired values, and that's what we think we'd like to, you know, those are the values we want to have. Practiced values are what we actually live, what we do, what we say, and the value gap is between them. And the goal of living with integrity for me is to close that gap. So that when I mind that gap, it's this big. It isn't an evil Knievel jump from one to the other. Although the width of that gap, width of that value gap, can change from day to day. And that's okay, because we're human. We are human having human experiences. So he also talks about sort of the things that get in our way, and I chuckled at them because they're very universal, I think, is probably the word I'd use. And he puts them basically into three categories. We wander off the path. You know, yes, we choose. We want to live a certain way. We want to live in alignment with our values. And there are just times we wander off. Sometimes it's by choice. Little squirrel, what's over there? And others, it's just it just happens. It's a part of life. But you can choose again once you realize that you've wandered off the path. The other thing that he talks about that's a little harder to do, well, let me go back. One other thing about wandering off the path is one of the big things that happens is we choose to have something outside of us determine our value when we're off the path. That we think, if I could just get this, I know I'd be okay. And if I could just get that, I know I'd be okay. That truly is, for me, the biggest headache of wandering off the path. But the other is ignoring integrity. And that then takes me back to Brené Brown's definition. It's choosing courage over comfort, choosing what's right over what's fun, fast, or easy, and choosing to practice our values rather than simply profess them. Now in the book, he said something really funny. I was actually laughing out loud. He says, the infamous J.R. Ewing, a character from the television show Dallas. Does anybody, most of us are old enough to remember Dallas. I knew his target audience when he wrote this. Like, yeah, he's not targeting, it's not even on the some always reruns show channel. But J.R. Ewing said, once you get past integrity, the rest is a piece of cake. Made me laugh. So we have to, if we aren't honoring our integrity, then, you know, I don't know about you, J.R. Ewing might have been wealthy, but he sure was a pain. So it's about learning to have that, to close the gap between our aspired values and our practiced or lived values. And when we do that, life is so much easier, but it takes being willing to allow ourselves humanity to be able to make that work, because no one can do this all the time. I love to reference this Vatura Papke, our beloved Vatura Papke, when she had her ordination ceremony. There's a very long, complicated thing, and you have all these vows, and I'll do this, and I'll do that, and I'll do this, and I promise I'll do that, and one of them is, and I'll live these principles all the time. She looks at Reverend Donald, and she says, no. No one can do that all the time, but I promise I'll do the best I can, in her little squeaky voice. No. And the whole room went. And she might have, because she loves to call people dear, she might have said, no, dear. The whole room, truly, if you could have heard a breath, because none of us had taken one. And then the room burst into hysterical laughter. Because she's right. No, dear, I can't do it all the time, but I promise I'll do the best I can. And that's really, she was one of the most delightful human beings I've ever had the good fortune of meeting. But the last piece is rationalizing. And the dictionary definition of rationalizing is to cause something to seem reasonable, to create an excuse or a more attractive explanation. And that's a really good way to try to be out of integrity, right? Because you go, well, it was okay that I did this because they were mean to me, or they were wrong, or whatever it may be. But that process of allowing yourself to make up a really good story why it's okay for you to do something that you know falls into the fast, fun, and easy category, as opposed to what's right. And he says, rationalizing overrides our true voice. It disconnects. It causes something to seem reasonable because we want it to be reasonable. This attempt to justify our action involves denial as we create our own more attractive reality. And therapists call that cognitive dissonance. So for us to be able to step past that, you know, we're creative. I don't know about you, but if you go back and think about times you've rationalized something, I could come up with some really good stories. I have come up some really good stories. But in the long run, don't you feel awful? I mean, if you, underneath, you know that it's a story. So the process of being able to be awake, aware, and at choice, which is really what, for me, is the most important thing about integrity, living in integrity, is to be able to see when I'm rationalizing, see when I've bitten the hook of somebody else's stuff, the wide-mouthed bass that I so often am. Christine works with me. She can tell you how often I am a wide mouth bass and get hooked by something. So it's that process of being able to tell the truth about who you are, about where you are, without beating yourself up. Because if we beat ourselves up, that's all we do. It's to then say, this is how I've gone away from living a life of integrity, of living my life in accordance with my practice, with my aspired values. I'm going to choose again. That's the greatest thing this philosophy teaches us, that we are always free to choose again. And that is by far the most powerful thing, I think, that we teach, that we can always choose again. So, and the last final thing that he says gets in way of living in integrity is we're on a path that's not ours. Now, I have a minister that I work with. He explained it in a way that blew my mind. He said, have you ever had something that you've been working on, a pattern, a belief, a problem? You've worked on it and worked on it and worked on it and worked on it, and it just never goes away. He said, sometimes It's not our problem to solve. It's not our pain to heal. It might be your father's or your sister's or your teacher's or your preacher's, but it's not our pain to heal. I have to tell you, it's hard to render me speechless, but he did. He did. So a part of it is to realize that, are we doing something it's somebody else's good idea? Because if it's somebody else's good idea, I am not living in integrity. And I can stop trying to heal it if it's a pattern that I have and just say, oh. For me, it's, hi, Dad. I'm 63 years old and you've been dead for a long time and I'm still here and you criticize me. And step back onto a path that's my own. Because that's really the key for me, is to be able to see what trips us up and then give ourselves permission to have done it, to have been it, to have felt it, to have whatever, and then choose again. Sometimes it requires taking accountability for your actions. It might require that you go to someone and talk about the fact that you have done something that you aren't necessarily thrilled with, and that you have hurt them perhaps in some way. But it's about that alignment, and choice is key. So personal integrity is to have one's thinking, feeling, and action in harmony. One's thinking, feeling, and action in harmony. And remember, integrity requires to discover who I am, claim who I am, and live who I am. And this is one of the really big messages that he gives in the book. Live with integrity, live intentionally, live authentically, live boldly. Leave nothing on the table, and there will be very few regrets. So that's my challenge to you all. That's my challenge to you all. I'm going to read it again. Live with integrity. Live intentionally. Live authentically. Live boldly. Leave nothing on the table. Let there be very few regrets. Amen. Thank you. So let's just take a moment and anchor this in prayer. So right here, right now, in the presence and the activity of that pure, sweet spirit, that spirit which is absolute, unconditional love, peace that passes all understanding, compassion, kindness, wealth, health, clarity, wisdom, all of that and so much more, that extraordinary divine that lives and moves and has its being in through and as me, in through and as each and every person everywhere. And that here in this moment, I know that as we go forward with a sense of excitement, with a sense of enthusiasm and expectancy, knowing that we have within us everything that it takes to stand in alignment with the truth of who we are, with that which we find valuable and important and precious and sacred. And that as we do that, life unfolds with a sense of beauty and joy, with grace and ease, with laughter and love. And that in that space, we also give ourselves permission to be fully human. And when there's a need to step back, it's done easily. And when we get back on that path, it's done lovingly and kindly. So I give thanks for each and every person in this room who has taken time out of their busy, busy holiday season to come and explore the truth of who they are, to see the value of who they are, the magnificence of who they are, to allow that to shine forward and through them in a way that has yet to have been done. That this extraordinary light that dwells in us all is that which shines forth through this season where we enter into darkness for rest and renewal. That in this time, we allow those values to become perfectly clear and easy for us to shift into changing our life to live in alignment with those values that allow us to stand in a place of personal integrity. I give thanks for this teaching, for all that we know, for all that we've learned, and for all we have yet to learn. And I am so grateful, so, so very grateful for my clear, clean knowledge that it is truth, that it works, that it is so. And in that space of clear, clean knowing, I release this with a sense of gratitude, with a sense of joy, with a sense of excitement, enthusiasm, and expectancy, knowing that good, good, and more good is on my way. And so it is. Thank you, ladies.